Okay, it's good to be here. Big crowd. Because you got the sun behind you, I can't see anybody. But
it's not
effulgence, man. Effulgence? I can't see the faces. Okay. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyave Hare.
Jaya
Radha Madhava Kunyave Hare. Pallava Indi Badadhare
Gopi Jana Pallava Indi Badadhare
Gopi Jana Pallava Indi Badadhare
Gopi Jana Pallava Indi Badadhare
Sudanan Tanna Rajajana Ranjana
Sodanandana
Rajajana Ranjana
Sodanandana Rajajana
Ranjana Unate Ramana Charate Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Bihare
Jaya Radha Madhava
Kunya Bihare
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Bihare
Nana Braja Jana Ranjana
Nana Braja Jana Ranjana Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravidacharya Osu Tato Sitashi Shimad His Divine Grace Avaya Chandana Bhaktivedanta Gosami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrindi Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Huilas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Se Gaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadha Shri Vasudeva Gaur Bhakta Vrindi Ki Jai Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopa Govinda Sayam Kun Radhakunda Giri Govardhan ki jai, Vrindavanam ki jai, Mathuram ki jai, Jagannatha Swami ki jai, Yamanamai ki jai, Srimati Lassi Devi ki jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi ki jai, Gaura Premananda Hare Hare Bol. All glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay, so we're reading today. I guess you don't have the verse written out, so we can't do it responsively, so that's life. Reading from the 11th canto, 14th chapter, text 17. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, so just listen carefully and repeat. Nishkanchana Mayi Anurakta Chetasaha Shanta Mahanto Akila Jiva Vatsalaha Kamair Analabdha Diyo Jushanti Te Yan Nairapeksha Na Vidhu Sukham Mama. So I guess I should be the only one reading it, because I don't think you'd be able to. We can try. What do you think? If everybody has a good memory. If I do it slowly, let's see if it works. Nishkinchana mai anurakta chetasa.
Nishkinchana mai anurakta chetasa.
Pretty good. Shanta mahanto kila jiva vatsalaha.
Shanta mahanto kila jiva vatsalaha.
Kamar analabda diyo jushanti te. It's a little harder. This is what's even harder. Yannaira peksham navidhu sukham mama. All right, try that a few more times. Nishkinchana mai anurakta chetasa. Shanta mahanto kila jiva vatsalaha. Kamairana labda diyo jashanti te. Yannaira peksham navidhu sukham mama. Okay, we've gone to the word by word synonyms. Nishkinchanaha, without any desire for sense gratification. Mahi, in me the Supreme Lord. Anurakta Chetasaha, mind constantly attached. Shantaha, peaceful. Mahantaha, great souls without false ego. Akila, to all. Jiva,
living entities.
Vatsalaha,
affectionate well wishers.
Kamai, by opportunities for sense gratification. Analabdha, untouched and unaffected. Diyaha,
whose consciousness.
Dushyante,
experience.
Te,
they.
Yat.
Yat.
Which.
Which.
Nirapeksham.
Nirapeksham.
Achieved only by complete detachment.
Achieved only by complete detachment.
Navidhu.
Navidhu.
They do not know.
They do not know.
Sukham.
Sukham.
Happiness.
Happiness.
Mama.
Mama.
My.
My.
So translation. Those who are without any desire for personal gratification, whose minds are always attached to me, who are peaceful, without false ego, and merciful to all living entities, and whose consciousness is never affected by opportunities for sense gratification, such persons enjoy in me a happiness that cannot be known or achieved by those lacking such detachment from the material world. So purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. The pure devotees always experience transcendental bliss in their service to Sri Krishna, the reservoir of pleasure. Thus they are completely detached from material pleasure and do not desire even liberation. Since all others have some personal desire, they cannot experience such happiness. Pure devotees always desire to give Krishna conscious happiness to all others, and therefore they are called Mahantaha, or great souls. In the course of a devotee's service, many opportunities for sense gratification arise, but a pure devotee is not tempted or attracted and does not fall down from his exalted transcendental position. So, again, the verse. Niskinchinamai anurakta chetasa shanta mahanto kilajiva vatsalaha kamayaranallapva diho jushanti te yandhairapeksham navitu sukham mama. So, Om Gana Timirandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So here we're being instructed about detachment. Actually, one of the words for detachment in Sanskrit is nirapeksha. And that basically means disinterested. It doesn't mean negative. It doesn't mean positive. It means just like neutral. You understand? Just neutral. If one is negative about sense gratification, because like Krishna says in the Gita, attachment and repulsion for sense objects are felt by the conditioned souls, that's just another side of attachment, like another side of the coin. You know, you have two sides of the coin, heads or tails. And so I remember when we first joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement, many people were negative about certain aspects of the material creation, particularly the brahmacharis. They were negative about the women. And whenever they saw a lady or a soul in a lady's body, they go, Hare Krishna! It's like they had come across a ghost or something. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Maya Devi. So Prabhupada tells one story about that, not about brahmacharis. Actually, two stories. There were two sannyasis, and they were walking, chanting Hare Krishna and their little japa beads. And they came to a river, and what happened is when they came to a river, they wanted to cross the river. And the river wasn't so deep, so there was also a lady who wanted to cross the river. And one of the sannyasis actually helped the old lady, or young lady, whatever she was, cross the river. Confirmed by the crow. Was it Edgar Allan Poe says, spoke the raven nevermore. A raven is a big crow. So anyway, crow was laughing at what I was saying. So anyway, so they crossed the river, and one of them helped the lady. And then what happened is they kept walking a few more kilometers. At the same time, the sannyasi who would not help the lady was grumbling. He was under his breath. He was going, I don't know why this rascal did this. You know, there's a You know, so many bad things he was saying under his breath, finding fault in his godbrother. They're both disciples of Prabhupada. So, I had a few little details of the story. So anyway, and then after a few miles or kilometers, the one who hadn't helped the lady said,
I have to ask you a question, Prabhu, or Maharaj. You know, why didn't you do this? Help that lady across the river. And that sannyasi said, who helped the lady? He said, actually, I carried her across the river, but you've been carrying her for several kilometers here. So who was attached, you know? So really, that's the point. He's just neutral. Actually, someone who is Krishna conscious is neutral towards the material energy. It's not that he's negative or positive. I mean, just like sometimes devotees, they ask me to do certain things, like go to sporting games or something like that. Or they invite me to the movies. They said, Maharaj, this movie has a spiritual part to it, you know. It's like devotees, there was one movie called Airport or Air, whatever it is, and had some devotees chanting in it. So, you know, for 2 seconds, the devotees chanting, so you got to go see the whole movie. So they asked me, he goes, anyway, so I said, no, I'm not interested. What would I do there? It's boring. So, in other words, we're not interested because we're having so much fun serving Krishna. There's another story Prabhupada told in this regard, too. Once upon a time, there was a lady who had become a prostitute, and she was a pure devotee. Somehow or other, I don't know how that happened. And there was a Brahmin living next to her. And he was just looking at her business, you know, her customers all the time. And he was counting on his computer. He was just like, had a database there. He was just adding, you know. And so the prostitute went back to Godhead, but he actually went to hell. Because he was just thinking of sense gratification his whole life. So we really have to become neutral to sense gratification, not be like the agitated brahmachari. I mean, Dwork and I were just talking about the old days in the movement when the sannyasis would come to the temple and try to steal the brahmacharis, particularly Radha Damodar party. They would come and they'd tell the brahmacharis, they would wait till the middle of the night till everybody was sleeping. They'd wake up the brahmacharis and say, wake up, Prabhu. How could you live in this temple with all these householders and women? You should travel with sannyasis like us. And the brahmacharis would say, yes, you're right. And so in the middle of the night, the brahmachari would leave and the temple president would wake up the next morning. And there'd be no devotees in the temple. Mangalarti would just be him, you know, him and his wife. So, I mean, that's the way, and also another story is, like in the beginning of the movement, not just about men and women relationships, but in the beginning of the movement, Prabhupada used to keep a whole jar full of these globjamins. Everyone knows what globjamin is. It's a sugar solution, you know, 2 parts sugar, 1 part water, diabetes pill. So Prabhupada would keep like a whole jar full of these globjamins soaked right by himself, and the devotees would freely just take whatever they wanted during the day. And one devotee who was so-called detached, he said, I think we should restrict the devotees to only taking one globjamin per day. And Prabhupada said to him, I think that we should restrict you to taking only one globjamin a day. And another time, there was a sannyasi. There's so many nice stories about this detachment, this negativity rather than detachment. There was a sannyasi, God brother of mine, his name was Panchadravida Maharaj. And Prabhupada just told the story about Shakshi Gopal. I think you all know the story about Shakshi Gopal. This older Brahmin promised the younger Brahmin, you could marry my daughter. And they were in pilgrimage, and the older Brahmin was from a high-class family. You know, in India, they're so much concerned with caste and classes, and their subcaste, subclasses. But the main thing is money. That's more important than caste. That's a symptom of Kali Yuga. If you have no money, you're high class, even if you're an ass. That's what Bhagavatam says. I'm just quoting from Bhagavatam. So what happened is they went back to their village after the younger Brahmin helped the older Brahmana do his pilgrimage. And the older Brahmana's family naturally opposed the younger Brahmachari, the Brahmana, marrying. So, therefore, the older Brahmana had made this promise in front of a deity. And that deity, of course, later on became known as Shakshi Gopal, the witness Gopal. And then younger Brahmana had to go back and get the deity to walk all the way across India. And he brought the deity to where the village was. And Prabhupada told the story. And the couple lived happily ever after, whatever. And when Prabhupada told the story, he said, well, both of these Brahmanas were pure devotees. And this sannyasi said to Prabhupada, but if he was such a pure devotee, why did he want to get married? You know, so he was thinking, yeah, pure devotee means he doesn't want to get married. He didn't consider there are people like Bhaktivinoda Thakur and, you know, other great devotees who were married. And even ladies in our sampradaya who are gurus. I mean, you have this whole, like, bias sometimes. Because we're discussing this in the GBC, can ladies become gurus in the Krishna consciousness movement? And there's the conservatives and the liberals. It's like you have in politics. You have a conservative party and a liberal party. So in the GBC, we have a conservative party and liberal party. And the neutrals. So anyway, so getting back to the story. So the sannyasi has Prabhupada. You know, Prabhupada, if he's such a pure devotee, why would he want to get married? You know, Krishna walked all the way across India for him. Why didn't he just, like, meditate on Krishna? What does he want to get entangled in this world? And then Prabhupada turned to the sannyasi and said, because nobody would have you. You're talking like that. In other words, you're just frustrated. Your renunciation is just like frustration with the material world. So, anyway, so there are many examples like that about how people get negative towards sense gratification or negative towards a particular ashram, but that's not really detachment. That shows attachment of another kind. So the question is, how do we actually become detached? In other words, how do we become real devotees? Well, amongst devotees, there's different classes of devotees. Generally, we're talking about Kanishta, Majjhima, and Uttama. So let's not worry about Uttama, that's too high for us right now. But let's talk about Kanishta and Majjhima. Kanishta is not a real devotee. He's an almost devotee. He's a Vaishnava Praya. You know what that means? Almost a devotee. Or Vaishnava Abhas, you know, like a shadow. And it's an interesting example of two Kanishta devotees who were actually in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. They even had nice spiritual names, Hiranya and Govardhan. They were the father and uncle of Raghunath Das Goswami. And what happened is they were trying to prevent Raghunath Das Goswami from joining the Hare Krishna movement. So they would always bring him back every time he tried to escape, and eventually he was able to escape. And he joined Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said about them, and of course we don't want to do this with people, you know, because it's really a big insult. But he said, your father and uncle are like worms in stool. Now, that's quite an insult if you tell people that in India. You're like a worm in stool. But the reason is that even though they had some knowledge about Krishna, they were still interested in material sense gratification. And the example of worms in stool is very appropriate, because if you take a worm out of the stool, what does he do? He complains. You know, why'd you take me out of the stool? I was having a good time. And then he jumps back in the stool. So, similarly, those who are on the lower level of devotional service, that's almost right, notice, they're interested in material sense gratification, utilizing Krishna. But that's not bhakti. That's not Krishna conscious. That's, of course, it's a preliminary stage. It's better than nothing. I mean, we have so many preliminary stages. We have Ajnata Sukriti, where one chants Hare Krishna not knowing what it is, or serves the devotees not knowing what they're doing. And then after that, you have the Kanishta Adhikari stage. But how do we make advancement to a higher stage, which is called the Majjhima Adhikari stage? And that hint is given here in this verse. It says, merciful to all living entities. And so, let's find the Sanskrit for that. And that means, akila jiva vatsalaha. And if you look at the actual Sanskrit, the actual Sanskrit says there, not only merciful, that's an indirect meaning to Vatsalha, but they're actually affectionate and loving. Like Krishna is called Bhakta Vatsal. Anyone's heard of that name for Krishna before? Bhakta Vatsal. It means he loves his devotees. So in other words, second class devotee means that one has to distinguish, as we know, between the Supreme Lord, the devotees, the innocent and the envious, these four different classes, but be loving towards all these four different classes. And the way that that's accomplished, interestingly enough, is by acting in that capacity, and then the consciousness follows. I'm going to tell you exactly what I mean. That means by preaching Krishna consciousness. Because until we share Krishna consciousness with others, because we are a Sankirtan movement, we're not supposed to be bhajan anandis. You know what bhajan anandi? Bhajan anandi means we go to Radha Kund and go, Radhe, 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 Radhe. And, you know, in our minds, we may be thinking we have a very deep personal realization. And then if we think we're gopis, we put on some lipstick and, you know, put on a sari. That happens. I've seen some pretty ugly gopis in Vrindavan. Gopis with beards, you know. Just So, I don't think Krishna dances with those particular types of gopis. So, no. What it means is, according to Prabhupada, and according to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his spiritual master, that he has these whole prayers to the mind. You know, my mind, you think you become a great devotee by sitting down and just chanting without preaching. And, and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, this, oh no, actually it's Prabhupada's. Prabhupada says, people are just increasing their bile secretion if they're not preaching Krishna consciousness. So in other words, that's how we can actually transform ourselves and help others become transformed to a higher level of actual Krishna, real Krishna consciousness by preaching. I mean, for example, I've had experience recently in some of the temples we've organized, or the devotees have organized. Let's say once a month, everyone goes out and book distribution, confirmed by Krishna. And it changes the whole community. Like, everyone starts to have so many realizations about Krishna consciousness. I remember in the early days when I used to do full-time book distribution, there were so many realizations. Bhagavad Gita, let me put this aside, Bhagavad Gita actually became alive by preaching, by book distribution, by going out. Because you actually experience how the conditioned souls are suffering. You experience the verses of Bhagavad Gita. Chai, shishi, gorna dai, gita. You actually experience the philosophy of Krishna consciousness firsthand, and you experience giving mercy out, being a conduit, that means a transparent via media, for Krishna's mercy, and it changes the whole community. There's one of my godbrothers, Vaisheshika Prabhu, some of you have heard of him, he goes around and trains up the different temples how to do that. And anyway, so and then people come to the platform of Majjhimadikari and they become enthusiastic to serve. So then you have situations like the Sunday feast, where instead of being interested in eating, the devotees are interested in serving. In some places where we haven't instituted that, like Fiji, so some of you may be from Fiji, when it comes time for the Sunday feast, the devotees are first in line and they make the guests serve them. You know, and not only that, but they have their takeaway plates too. And if there's anything left over for the guests, you know, that's Krishna's mercy. The devotees come first. Yeah. So when we don't have that compassion, when we see Krishna consciousness just something to enjoy, either, you know, develop the higher qualities or whatever, become a Raghunuga Bhakta, then we never really make progress. Prabhupada said, deserve, then desire. I mean, there's so many quotes from Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, also, those who engage in preaching, it's on the same level of the gopis in Vrindavan. I mean, there's many quotes. Prabhupada said that in a letter to Ramaswara Prabhu. So, that's the first point. And then, when one does that, then you really become detached because you develop an internal life. Like real detachment, or complete, or absolute, let's use the word absolute, which means there's no chance of becoming attached, arises when one actually develops their internal life. Not just gets happiness from chanting, but comes to a higher stage of devotional service, which is called Raganuga Bhakti. We're not proposing that for anyone. But when you come to a higher stage of devotional service by preaching, by sharing Krishna consciousness, and of course by also by being strict in your own sadhana, then you actually have, you enter into Krishna's pastimes. And it's real. Just like you hear stories about Srinivas Acharya. Srinivas Acharya used to go into trance. There's one interesting story. I was telling this the other day in Sydney, that sometimes he'd go into trance for several days with his internal life. And his wife, he was married, his wife was very worried because her husband's sitting there for several days without eating or drinking. And she said, what's the problem? And she didn't want to shake him and say, Prabhu, wake up. You know, because you definitely don't want to do that when a devotee's in meditation. Of course, there's a funny story. There was a Mayavadi who was supposedly in Samadhi, but he had died. And Prabhupada said his disciples were saying, Gurudev's in Samadhi, he's absorbed in transcendental trance. And then Prabhupada said when the body began to smell, they understood he had already died. So, but a devotee's trance is different. So this great devotee, Srinivas Acharya, who was meditating, and he was entering into Krishna's pastime. Actually, what he was doing in this pastime was looking for like a anklet or a ring that Radharani had lost when she was in the Yamuna River. So what happened is his wife called for one of his disciples named Ramchandra Kaviraj. He came and he sat down next to his guru and he entered into the same meditation. So it's real. And together they were able to find what Radharani had lost. And then after they found that, they both came back to external consciousness at the same time and embraced each other and cried in ecstasy. So it's real. And sometimes Srinivas Acharya would go into meditation on Krishna's pastimes and he would come out and he would be bringing back a garland from the spiritual world. Pretty good, isn't it? I mean, so it's a real life that pure devotees have. I mean, that's a coming attraction for us. I'm not saying that prematurely, you know, oh, think of myself as a gopi or as a cow. Moo. It doesn't work like that. But it becomes revealed to one as one engages in the preaching mission at Srila Prabhupada's movement. I mean, it's absolutely sure it will happen if you don't commit offenses, you engage in the preaching movement, Prabhupada's movement. And then you become so detached that you can act like Ramananda Roy was doing. I'm not saying that we should imitate. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said no one should imitate. But Ramananda Roy was personally teaching the Devi Dasis, that means young girls, how to dance, you know, bathing them and everything like that. He was a man, externally. And he wasn't feeling any disturbance because he identified himself in terms of his spiritual identity. I mean, that's a big thing. Of course, right now we can identify ourselves as servants of our spiritual master, servants of Srila Prabhupada. And that really keeps us fixed. Because when we identify ourselves like that, then sense gratification, even if we have the tendency, we will just tolerate. Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, upasta vegam. We just tolerate the pushings. But when you're on a higher platform, you don't have to even worry about tolerating because you're identifying yourself with your actual spiritual identity. Anyway, so that's real detachment, and as Srila Prabhupada said, a pure devotee is not tempted or attracted and does not fall down from his exalted transcendental position. But that only occurs when one's an absolutely pure devotee. Even if you're on the stage of bhava, like Bharat Maharaj, you can fall down. Because if you're not attentive, right now we must be very attentive. We must always be thinking of ourselves as servants of our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada, and of Srila Prabhupada's movement. And just avoid any sort of sense gratification, then we can make spiritual advancement. Avoid bad association. Bad association is one of the worst things. Okay, so these are some of the points I wanted to make. So any questions or comments about these points? Yes.
Once somebody has become a pure devotee and can mentally enter into this eternal pastime,
yes,
in their seat that they have,
yeah,
then why do they still have to remain in this material world?
That's it mentioned here. Jiva Vatsalaha. Jiva Vatsalaha, you weren't here for that, means that they love all living entities. In other words, that love is manifested by compassion. Kripa Sindhu. Kripa Sindhu means like an unlimited compassion, ocean. Ocean is used in that respect to indicate unlimited. I mean, just like, for example, you're affectionate towards your children, right? You have love for your children. Why don't you just go to work and leave your children home to fend for themselves? Because you're always thinking of them. So the pure devotee, or even advanced devotee, is always thinking of other living entities. Like he doesn't have the bodily concept of I and mine, you know, my children, your children, you know, Fiji Indian, Indian Indian, you know, or Gujarati, or what else?
Punjabi,
South Indian, what's your Gotra Prabhu? You know, I'm just talking to someone about that. Prabhupada said we should always say Achyuta Gotra. And then some devotee got really upset when I said that. He said, but I have a good Gotra. I am Bharadwaj Gotra or something like that. Why should I just be Achyuta Gotra? I said, that's bodily consciousness. Isn't it? You know, because we are Achyuta Gotra. We're part of Krishna's family. So therefore, when one becomes Krishna conscious, you see everyone like your children or family members.
So it's basically for preaching to others.
For preaching to others.
Or compassion.
Kind of compassion, yeah. Did you feel so much? I mean, you're automatically drawn to take care of your child, your children. I mean, when they cry, it just touches your heart. You just go, oh. Like Prabhupada said, that even the mother considers the stool of the child like sandalwood pulp. I know you meant it sounds funny, but it's true. Like Kishore was just like sandalwood pulp. And of course, I went, you. So, that's horrible. So it's like that. I mean, just like, all right, let's give another example, like Lord Chaitanya and Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami had all these sores on his body because he'd gone through the Jharkhand forest and not eaten properly or taken care of himself. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu one time tested him. He said, come to see me. And Sanatana Goswami took the long way across burning sands because he didn't want to go in front of the temple, where the pujaris might touch him because he had all these sores. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kept forcibly embracing Sanatana Goswami. And Sanatana Goswami, at one point, he wanted to commit suicide, you know, just jump under the Rath Yatra cart. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu forbade him to do that. And then another point, he just wanted to leave and go to Vrindavan, and because Jagannanda Pandit was advising him to do that. And Lord Chaitanya said, this is ridiculous. And Lord Chaitanya even criticized Jagannanda Pandit. And Lord Chaitanya kept embracing him. And then the question was risen, but, you know, Lord Chaitanya's embracing Sanatana Goswami with all these sores. How can he do that? I mean, who wants to embrace someone who has pus coming from his body? And then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu basically gave two explanations. He said, I'm a sannyasi, I'm supposed to be neutral. If I considered the pus coming from your body to be abominable, then I wouldn't be properly fulfilling the sannyas dharma. But then the devotee said to Lord Chaitanya, that's just external. And Lord Chaitanya said, yes, you're right. Because Sanatana Goswami is like my child. So he had this affectionate relationship. I mean, this is one thing we should learn as Vaishnavas, or aspiring Vaishnavas, about having affectionate relationships with each other. I mean, we're so much prone to find fault with each other. Isn't it? I mean, it's just like... But you don't find fault with your own child. I mean, if you do, it's to correct them. It's not because you go around talking behind their back, you know, my son, the other day he did this. It's horrible. And you talk to all your neighbors about it. You know, like you have this normal thing, gossip. So you don't do that with your children. So you don't do that with other devotees, too. So you read about these Vaishnavas, Srinivasacharya, Narottama Das Thakur, and others. They have these wonderful, loving relationships between each other. Which is, you know, that's part of Vaishnavism, rather than hating. So the point is that we should have this spiritual consciousness that yastu sarvani bhutani atmane vanupashati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam. That everyone is part and parcel of Krishna, they're all our brothers and sisters, and especially the Vaishnavas. That's part of second class devotee anyway. That you make friends with the devotees. Making friends doesn't mean, you know, high five, how are you, Prabhu, pass the prasadam, Prabhu. It means really having deep, deep relationships. And that's what will keep people in the Krishna consciousness movement. Actually, I have a whole chapter in my book I've written about that. I wrote a book about communication and devotee relationships. And the whole chapter I'm dealing with that and explaining how even having good relationships is good for one's health. There's actually scientific studies about that, that people who don't have warm, loving relationships with other people are something like 50%, oh, actually 200% more likely to have cancer. You know, it's really interesting. And I look at devotees, sometimes they get sick. And anyway, it's due to a variety of reasons. One is they may be eating too much of the wrong thing. So we won't mention that because we don't want to upset people in class. So loving relationships. And so that means yata shatrava shanta sadhava sadhavushana, according to Lord Kapilade, a devotee should have no enemies, especially amongst other devotees. And we should appreciate every bit of service that any devotee executes. That's Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, we're just Kanishadhikaris. Do we want a Kanishadhikari movement? I don't think so. So, anyway, so any other questions or comments?
Yes. Marsh, I was wondering just about the meaning of the word beer, as in beer Krishna Marj, or in Vigata beer from the Bhagavad Gita, basically.
Well, it's like someone who renounces alcoholic beverages. You know, it was going to be wine Krishna, but it was changed to beer Krishna. No, I'll tell you what it means. It's Prabhupada's Bengalicized pronunciation, and even wrote it that way for me, of the word Sanskrit word vira. Vira means heroic in Sanskrit, or power, or potency, and stuff like that. And I think in Hindi it's similar, bir. So, the Prabhupada would pronounce it, bir, the Sanskrit V like a B, that's a Bengali pronunciation. He even wrote it like that. So, that's why, and at the same time I took initiation, there were other beers initiated at the same time. There was Bir Raga, Bir Mala, and Bir Lakshman. We had four beers together. We took four beers together. No. Anyway, so that's what it means. I'm a servant of Krishna, who is a great hero. He's the greatest of heroes.
In his expression, Vikata beer, it means devoid of fear. So
devoid of fear. Yeah, it means heroic.
Okay.
Vikata beer. Yeah, Vikata beer. Yeah, he's heroic and he's free of vigata is the one word. He's free of fear because he's heroic. I mean, literally, that's how you would take it. Vigata, have free of lamentation too. So, any other questions? Yeah.
Maharaj, I remember hearing over the years that Srila Prabhupada said that qualification is like salt. I don't think I've really ever understood what that means.
Okay, I'll explain. Well, first of all, the Prabhupada's brief explanation was that if you get too much salt, you get sick, which means high blood pressure and all sorts of other problems, you know, in the circuit, and the kidney problems too. The problem wasn't specific about that. If you have too little, it's tasteless. So, therefore, I refer to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Chaitanya Shikshamrita. He says, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, we have necessities. And those necessities are of different varieties. There's physical necessities, mental necessities, psychological necessities. In psychology, of course, there's the people talk about the hierarchy of needs. Anyone who studies psychology will know what I'm talking about. So, I mean, for example, we need to breathe. I mean, let's start with the bottom there. You know, if you don't breathe within 3 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever it is, you're going to die. And then you have a need for the proper environment, not too hot, not too cold, and then food. You can go a little longer without food, but you can't go too long without breathing or the proper environment, air and everything like that. So then you have other needs. After that, we have we have needs for love, just like I was talking about that. Actually, that's the chapter in my book is called "All You Need Is Love." So appropriate for a sannyasi to write about things like that. But anyway, so and then you have needs for play. You have needs for interdependence. You have needs for autonomy. Just like sometimes the children, when they get to be 2 years old, they start to express their needs for autonomy. And the parents call it the terrible twos, but actually it's the nice twos because they're expressing themselves as individuals. So many times we try to push down people's needs for autonomy, and they actually lose their enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness if we're too much authoritative. You know, we have to be more empowering. Prabhupada was very empowering. At times authoritative when it was necessary because we were a bunch of young kids. But generally, Prabhupada was very empowering. You know, he'd give us opportunities. I remember I joined the movement. I was opening up a new temple 6 months after I joined the Hare Krishna movement and giving Sunday feast lectures. And it was a very empowering time in Krishna consciousness. You joined the movement and you had a lot of room for upward mobility and stuff like that. It was nice. You didn't wash pots for the next 50 years. Mm. Which is nice. I mean, washing Krishna's pots is nice too. But so, and there's psychological needs. Psychological needs that we have. I mean, I go through a whole list of needs. And then ultimately we have spiritual needs. Need for compassion. You know, compassion needs. And this is what Prabhupada was referring to indirectly about these needs. And, you know, you could say they're sense gratification. Like, because look at Raghunath Das Goswami, who was basically eating rice that even the cows wouldn't eat, right? He was eating this rice and just putting a little salt on, washing it, and say, well, Prabhu, when you really make advancement, this is how you should become. And if you tell that to people, they say, I don't want to make advancement, become like that. I mean, I was watching a devotee when I was very young eat very little, and I was thinking, I never want to become advanced, if that's what it means. And that devotee was doing it artificially. And he eventually left the Krishna consciousness movement. So we should identify, and everybody's needs are different. And everybody has a different quota, as it's said in the Isha Upanishad. Ishvashamidam sarvam yukkanja jatajam jagat. And Krishna's given everybody what they need. You know, someone may need to have warm showers in the morning. And some people may be happy just taking a cold shower in the morning. Some people may need a soft bed to lie on to go to sleep at night. And other people may be happy lying on the floor. So we shouldn't criticize people because they are accepting more for themselves. They may need more for themselves. Some people may need to sleep 4 hours a night. Some people may need to sleep 8 hours a night. I was just giving a class about that in Sydney, and one devotee just remarked that the majority of brahmacharis in the temple were sleep deprived, you know, because they were told to surrender. You know, and I'm thinking, how can you treat people like that so they're sleep deprived, number one, and how can people tolerate that? You know, people should just, because their sense of autonomy of taking care of themselves, they should just say, you know, I need more sleep. You know, I want to be a brahmacharya, but, you know, it's not because I need 7 or 8 hours of sleep that you're going to send me to the household ashram. You know, some people become married just so they can go to sleep. Seriously. I mean, because brahmacharya life is so tough, and there's no bachelor ashram. You know, bachelor ashram. So they, you know, the only way they'll get a good night's rest is to get a wife. And then when they get a wife and the kid wakes up in the middle of the night, they still don't get a good night's rest. What is that? They say, lost their caste and still haven't satisfied their hunger. So, I mean, and someone may need, you know, companionship. So that's a bona fide reason for getting married. But not just because you want to go to sleep. So sometimes you go into some temples and you find, open up the closet and the brahmacharis are sleeping in the closet. And they feel so guilty about it, you know. So anyway, so we all have necessities. Everyone should be responsible to understand their own necessities. And I can't tell you what you need. I can say basically what I need in terms of my basic bodily, mental, physical, and all other necessities. But anyway, so you need that or else you can't. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says if you don't fulfill your basic human needs, then you're not going to be able to be steady in devotional service. And I've seen that. When people are situated on an artificial platform of renunciation, they're like shooting stars, you know, just like, and you don't see them anymore. So we want people. And another example Prabhupada gave was the Gajendra Mokshana story, where Gajendra was in the water fighting the crocodile. The crocodile was in his natural environment, and the Gajendra was in his unnatural environment, and therefore the crocodile was defeating the elephant. And Prabhupada used that to illustrate the point that people should be in whatever ashram they need in order to steadily execute devotional service year after year. So we identify that, and then we don't feel guilty about it. And why should we feel guilty? You know, if I need 7 hours, 8 hours sleep, I'm not going to feel guilty about it. And if you criticize me, that's your problem, not mine. That's the way I look at it. You know, if I need to eat something, and you're criticizing sense gratification, that's your problem. You have to deal with it. You know, I can deal with my own problems, but I'm not going to take your problems on me. Many times people do that. They take other people's problems. Other people, especially in certain cultures where everybody criticizes everyone else, talks behind the back of everyone else, you're just like, you're living your life to please everybody else. We should live our life to please Krishna and the pure devotees. And if people don't like it, tough. I mean, just like when I joined the movement, I got a call from my mother. She said, you're not living your life properly. Your life is meant to please me. And I said, no, my life is meant to please Krishna. And then she tried even a heavier trick. She had people calling me and telling me that she was dying because I joined the Hare Krishna movement. And she said, your mother's dying. You're going to be responsible for killing her. I said, just tell me when and I'll chant Hare Krishna as she leaves the body. But now and that was 50 years ago and she's still alive. At 87 years old, she swims 50 laps in the swimming pool every day. And she's happy to join the movement. She comes to my Vyas Puja ceremonies and worships me along with the devotees. So, you know, I wasn't controlled. And because of that, she's doing better, I'm doing better, and we're all happy. We're a happy family. So that's the point. You got to do what's right. As one person said, do the right thing. You have this sense of dharma, doing the right thing and also taking care of the body. Body belongs to Krishna. Body, mind, manasa deha geha, yoga shimura, apilam to your body. Nandakishore, your mind, my body, my home, everything is yours, Krishna. So take care of it nicely. Sometimes devotees don't take care of their material possessions. Like one time Prabhupada was in a car and the car was dirty and probably had no petrol in it. Devotees' cars generally have no petrol. The meter just stays on empty the whole time. Because they don't want to waste Krishna's money by filling up with petrol. So, you ever seen that?
Yes.
So Prabhupada said to this devotee, he said, who do you think this car belongs to? it belongs to Krishna. You take care of it nicely. Your body belongs to Krishna. Your car belongs to Krishna. Your family belongs to Krishna. It's Krishna's property, your family. It's not your property. It's not my family. It's Krishna's family. And so you want to take care of it because it belongs to God. You're committing an offense. If people take shelter of you, you don't help them become a Krishna conscious, you don't take care of them properly, it's a great offense. One of the greatest offenses. So, because it's Krishna, belongs to Krishna. It's not yours to mistreat. Even your computer belongs to Krishna. So any question? Any other questions or comments?
The idea of being neutral and not attached might sometimes contradict trying to stay in the mode of goodness. So I was wondering, is it possible that you could maybe jump too fast to that idea of being neutral and not being attached to anything?
Well,
because then you might be disrupting your principles of the mode of, in the mode of goodness.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. That's actually a good point. That one should cultivate mode of goodness activities, mode of goodness food, mode of goodness life.
Yes.
However, if you get too attached to it, I mean, like I'll give you an example. A devotee with Prabhupada sometimes would just praise the sunrise or something like that. I mean, it's all right. I mean, it's a beautiful sunrise. But you get too much into it. When you contemplate anything, and especially the mode of goodness, according to Krishna in the Gita, bewilders one because one becomes very attached to it. There's a sense of happiness in the mode of goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And so then one can actually forget one's Krishna consciousness or neglect one's Krishna consciousness. I mean, for example, I mean, Bharat Maharaj, his wanting to help that deer, the baby deer, was actually a mode of goodness thing. It wasn't a passion. It later what became passion. But in the beginning, it was like, you know, here's a living entity. I mean, there's no problem with that. I mean, if a deer would die out, would be left, a baby deer would be left outside here, I mean, I would certainly want to take care of it.
Yeah.
But then, because you're getting so much pleasure out of the mode of goodness, he actually became so attached that he basically became passionate. He thought, I'm the deer's protector. Without me, the deer won't, you know, move. And then instead of saying his Gayatri mantra, he was kissing the deer.
Yeah.
And eventually, as we know, he was looking for the deer. Oh, dear, where are you, my dear? And then he fell off a cliff or whatever, and he died and he became a deer. So there's a danger in the mode of goodness, becoming attached. I mean, we can be aware of things, and we should eat food in the mode of goodness, wake up early in the morning, that's the mode of goodness. Yeah, we should cultivate the mode of goodness to please Krishna. Your question is quite good. It's not that we should, you know, artificially say, you know, waking up at 11 o'clock in the morning is the same thing as waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning. It's not. I mean, we should be somewhat attached for Krishna's service, but it should always be attached to Krishna's service or else it gets bewildering. I mean, certainly taking care of a little baby deer, it's fine. Chant Hare Krishna into its ear. But don't give your heart to its body. Little cute little deer. Actually, one should be equal to all living entities. That's real mode of goodness. Where one sees one underlying spiritual principle. Bhagavad Gita talks about this in all living entities. That's understanding the mode of goodness. And that means you see the deer and the cockroach equally. Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmani Gavi Hashtani Shuni Chai Viswapake Cha Pandita Samadarshana. Like, if you're thinking you love the deer and you hate the cockroach, that's sense gratification. That's not mode of goodness right there. That's passion. Because you're seeing different living entities in different types of bodies. So we have to really be able to identify what is the mode of goodness and strive for it. Thank you for the question. It was good.
So would you say the mode of goodness could be more of a guideline rather than strict rule?
Yeah, it's what the mode of goodness is, to use an example of Prabhupada, I don't know the problem, but I've used this example before. The mode of goodness is like the airport. But if you become too attached, just like yesterday I was in the airport and there was all these stores there and you can go shopping. And if you become too attached to shopping in the airport and you don't notice that your airplane is taking off. That happens all the time, not with me. But you hear these announcements. so-and-so, your plane's, we're taking your baggage off the plane because you're not showing up. Obviously, he's in the airport, he's checked in, he's gone through security, but definitely he's going through the, he or she is going through the shops and just looking, isn't that nice, you know? Because they have so many shops now in the airport. Previously, it wasn't like that. You just go to your plane. But now the airport is just like, wow. It's like going to a mall, isn't it? And, you know, especially people like liquor. It's good. The airports have become liquor stores. Maha liquor stores. And when you come in, especially you come into Sydney, or even India's like that now, too. Anyone's gone to India lately? When you go through, after you've gone through immigration in India, you go into the middle of a liquor store. And you think it's the land of religion, a liquor store. And this liquor is very expensive. Anyway, so people get bewildered by in the airport, even though you have to go to the airport to take a plane, but you can get bewildered there by what's happening in the airport and miss your plane. So that's the same thing happens with the mode of goodness. You have to go to the mode of goodness. That's the place you take off from to go back to Godhead. I mean, we're not, we advocate cleanliness, you know, samadham at the Bhakshav Cham, cleanliness, mercy, being equal poise to other living entities, as Krishna says in the Gita. But if you get too attached to these things, then you don't take up Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
So it's one has to be careful. But the mode of goodness is important, like you pointed out.
Mm-hmm.
It is important. So other questions, you have Dwarka.
I think it's all about keep knowing how to differentiate from Niyamagra and not infinity.
Yeah. Yeah, Niyamagraha means following the rules and regulations without any spiritual principle, spiritual purpose. Niyamagraha. Niyamagraha means neglecting the rules and regulations. Yeah, it's a question of being attentive and all. What I think of is I just identify myself as Srila Prabhupada's servant. And that really helps me, you know, when I make a decision, you know, what would Prabhupada say? I mean, sometimes we get, I give the example, sometimes we get attracted to different things in this world. For example, I was driving with one disciple once and we were going by a hang gliding place. Everyone knows what hang gliding is? We jump off the mountain and just float like a bird. So I said to him, wow, what do you think about this? And he says, I says, Gurudev, I'll take you, I'll pay for it. I said, what a nice disciple. So takes his guru into Maya. Anyway, so so I said, wow, that'd be fun. And then, but I was thinking, what would Prabhupada say? Would Prabhupada say, yeah, go for it? And I was trying to justify it in my mind. You know, we try to justify everything. So I was thinking, well, if I chant Hare Krishna while I'm doing it, then that will make it more Krishna conscious. Or if I even have a banner behind me that says, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. That. But then I thought, well, if something happens and I break a leg or something, how could I explain that to my disciples? I was dancing ecstatically and then all of a sudden I broke my leg. I couldn't say that. So then I decided not to do it, even though there was an opportunity, because I thought, basically it was like, you know, Prabhupada would say no. Prabhupada wouldn't be happy, and that's not a good idea for me. So if you have this identification as a servant, then you're able to withstand any sort of temptation you have. Then it becomes easier. You just think, who am I? What is my identity? Think of identity. Jivara Svarupohoi Nitya Krishna Das or Gopi Bharata Padakamala Dasa Dasa Dasanu Das. And then you won't do anything, hopefully. So, any other questions or comments? No? Probably time for prasadam, for some sense gratification. But that's authorized. And you need it. I probably actually one time said when they were trying to feed him a very bland diet, he said, let the starvation committee go to hell. You know, so Prabhupada really wasn't showing us heavy austerities by his activities. Even on Ekadasi, Prabhupada never fasted completely on Ekadasi. He would have the devotees prepare him Ekadasi special preparations on Ekadasi. But, you know, Prabhupada wasn't portraying an example of extreme austerity. I'm not saying one can't fast the whole night on Ekadasi. If you could chant Hare Krishna all night, and be happy and get up the next day and serve Krishna the whole day. Fantastic. But most people, they do it, they get a migraine headache, and then they can't serve Krishna the next day, 2 days, because they're completely sick from what they did the night before. So we have to understand what we need personally for our own physical, mental, spiritual welfare. Okay, because that's it. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. We were broadcasting this class on Mayapur TV. I just wanted to see how many people are watching. This is a slow phone, Dwarka. What's that?
I'm not sure what's the reception like. Maybe one dot.
Yeah. Yeah.